Hello, my workday playdate peeps. It's Erin here, and today we're going to dive into a topic that is near and dear to my heart, but one that also doesn't get talked about nearly enough, especially from a male perspective. So we are breaking the silence on infertility today. And if you have ever felt alone or know somebody who is going through an infertility journey, especially my dudes out there, this episode is for you because I see you. I really do. And the week that this show is airing is Infertility Awareness Week. And you know, we don't shy away from the real talk here. Infertility is a journey that impacts 1 in 6 couples. And let me just say that again, 1 in 6 couples. And while there's so much support for women going through it, our men often suffer in silence, feeling like they have to stay strong, be the rock, and carry the weight without a place to process. And I saw this firsthand with my own husband. He felt alone, and we realized that there are so many men who feel the same way but don't talk about it. And that's why we're doing this episode today, to let you know that you are not alone and to help leaders understand why this matters in the workplace too. Now, we've talked about this on the show. If you are an OG, Improve It peep, you can go all the way back to episode 49, where it was once called the Failed It podcast, foreshadowing for sure. But that's where I first shared our story of infertility. And then in episode 285, I opened up about our recent experience with secondary infertility. So today we're flipping the script and we're giving the mic to my husband, John Deal, so he can share what this journey feels like from a male perspective. So let's just set this up. There is a huge problem for infertility for families, couples within our nation. Male factor infertility accounts for 30 to 50% of cases. The emotional and financial strain can be super overwhelming, with treatments costing thousands and carrying no guarantees. So why is it so hard for men to talk about this? There's a lot of expectations. Be strong. Don't cry. Fix it. Infertility can really challenge a man's sense of identity and self-worth. There's a lack of community and resources, and there aren't many safe spaces for men to open up about this. And I know we have so many leaders who listen to this show, and it's especially tough for leaders because you're expected to show up, to push through, and to always be on. The mental load of infertility can affect your focus, your motivation, and your emotional well-being at work. But talking about it, that's still rare. And we need to change that. So if you're listening to this and you're currently walking this path, I want you to know we see you. If you're a guy going through this and feeling isolated, this episode is for you. And if you're a leader struggling to balance your personal struggles with professional responsibilities, we are talking to you too. So, my friends, this is a long time coming. Today, we have my partner in crime, my life partner, my best friend, my laugh track, the man who makes it all happen, dad to Big Deal and Jackson Deal, John Deal, on the show. Welcome, husband.
Thanks for having me. As you said, it has been a long time coming. You've asked a bunch, and I've said I'm not sure. But today, I'm glad we're doing this. To be honest, I can't say I'm excited to talk about this part of my life or our life publicly. But who knows? Maybe it'll actually help with closure and to, you know, bring a better understanding of my view of things by talking it out even, you know, a number of years later. Jackson's 5 and a half now. So there was a light at the end of the tunnel. But it wasn't a clear path. It wasn't pretty. But it happened. So yeah, let's do it.
Let's Do it. Now, I just want to set the stage for our peeps. I'm in my podcast closet, which is literally a closet that we converted into a podcast closet. Literally, he helped me do this. Big deal is on my lap, and he has the worst breath possible in a very tiny enclosed space. So he's with us. That's our 8-pound toy poodle who's 13 and blind. And you're sitting downstairs in our guest room because there's not room for two of us in the pod closet. So we're doing this in our home, but not face to face. So just setting up the scene here for the Improve It peeps. So I don't even know if you know this, John, but every month on the show, we have an intention. And our intention for the month of April is taking initiative and creative risks. So what I love to do with guests before we start the show is give a one-word intention that we want to either give or get out of today's conversation.
Okay. I would say openness. And I suppose if I can throw out a second, I'd say self-reflection for me specifically.
Ooh. Okay, we'll give you that. It's a hyphenated word. We'll give you that. And we'll give you two because you're my husband and that's what we do for each other. Okay.
Special privs. Thank you.
Special privs. Look, he even abbreviates, y'all. He even abbreviates. So, okay. We're going to get into it. And I mean, I want people to know you because you're an amazing human, but I also want to start talking about what people are here to talk about and what you're here to talk about, because I know it's not going to be easy and it might be hard for both of us. But what made me so excited to have you on the show is I've opened up about our journey. I've talked to so many women and men. And what has struck a chord with me is that the men really don't have a resource, nor do they really talk about it. So let's just take a step back. Let's pretend this is the first time somebody's ever listening to the show. They haven't listened to past episodes. Let's start at the beginning when we first realized infertility was going to be part of our journey. What was going through your mind?
I think at the onset, I was shocked and I was confused. And I think, you know, I didn't understand why there were complications or why we were even needing to look into things or why we were hearing the news. And I think, you know, we're both healthy people and we know so many people who have kids, who had kids quickly, who had kids without trying. And I think, you know, I didn't put a whole lot of time and consideration into it being any other than that for our experience as well. And so that was, I think that was, you know, my first thought. And maybe with most things, my instinct was to go into fix it mode. But you know, that very quickly, I found out that I was in over my head and that I really didn't have know-how to navigate the situation. And even worse, I think I found out quickly that I didn't have a whole lot of energy to deal with it. I think after hearing the news, after talking with you, after kind of considering what path we were on, I just felt sluggish. I felt lethargic. I felt drained. You know, even though I didn't even begin to do anything as a part of the process yet, it was just like the onset of that news kind of had that like mental and I think that physical impact on me. So I don't know. It was probably as close to an out-of-body experience as I've ever had. And I think I felt like helplessness because I didn't know where to start. Yeah. So those were some of the initials.
So good. You know, not a lot of people know this about you, but we do call you the metrosexual Chip Gaines because that I used to post about that on Instagram when my account was private. And you do typically go into fix-it mode because he is very handy. And I think this was really interesting because this was an uncharted territory. Neither you nor I had ever been down. We had no clue how to fix it. And so it kind of went against all your natural instincts. You know, that's what I heard you say. And I think you played such a role in this. And I want to talk to you about your role. Did you feel any type of pressure to stay strong for both of us? What would you say about your role?
I mean, I think there were initially two roles that I was kind of dealing with. And the first was, I guess with both of them, I didn't really know my place. And so the first role was the role that I had expected to play and that I had seen many examples of, which was of being a dad and being a parent. And because I have two great examples of that in my mom and dad. So in the beginning, it was hard for me to follow through, I think, on simple things with the IVF journey because I had no steps. I didn't know the next steps. I didn't have any priors of what to expect and no concept of like the overall process. So I was kind of dealing with like a mix of, okay, the initial expectation was fatherhood and being a dad. And then I was kind of grappling with that. And then the other was, what's my role in the IVF process and supporting you or helping to drive or just support the process overall? And I didn't really know where to go on that front. So it kind of, for me in the beginning, it split into two right away. But from the IVF side of things, I think, like, in a sense, you kind of provided that direction for me up front, because as probably many people know, who listen to your podcast or who know you personally, you gave a lot of direction at the onset. And so you're an action-oriented person. And even with this, you were going to figure it out. You were going to get in touch with the doctors, the nurses, the lab techs to get the answers that were needed and to do that research. And so, you had questions and insecurities and struggles of your own. And so I was there, I think, in my mind, I think I was there initially to support you because you took the action quickly and you were on top of it and you were scheduling those meetings. And so I was like, I was a support cast. I was there to support you. And I think, you know, you were determined to figure this out. And I was determined to support you through it. And I think it was easier for me to be there for you because I didn't have to face, you know, my own insecurities or uncertainty about the process. And so I think initially my role was to talk with you, to hear about next steps like you had uncovered, to help come up with questions for the appointments, to go to the appointments with you, to follow through on my own protocols that I had to explore for myself. And I think, you know, we were a team, but I was, you know, at least in that initial period, and maybe through all of it, the supporting cast member. I think, though, like, as our journey progressed, my role became more structured, where, you know, I was doing things like ordering the meds or administering shots during the IVF cycle, you know, handling the financials and some of the insurance stuff, which I was good at, I think, most of it. And I felt like I was a close partner with you on those things. I don't know. You asked, like, did I feel pressure to stay strong for both of us? I think, like, I don't know. It was like a yes and a no. I did want to be strong for you, for us. But for once, I think, like I mentioned earlier, you know, I didn't have a ton of energy. Like, you know, I kind of felt zapped. And so I felt like I had an empty tank. And so I was doing what I could to support you. And I don't know, you tell me. I think I did a good job of it. But yeah, there was kind of a lot going on at that point.
Yeah. So let's talk about the fact that not a lot of dudes talk about infertility. How did you feel going through the process as a man? Do you feel like you had somebody you could talk to? Did you feel alone? Like, what were some of your feelings?
I I didn't talk to people about it probably as much as you did. I talked to my family, mom, dad, brother, sister, and I talked to two or three close friends, and I think that's pretty much it. I would have in-depth convos with my family, and then with friends, it was lighter, but like high quality check-ins that I really appreciated. And that meant a lot. And I get like, it's a hard thing, an awkward thing to ask somebody about how they're doing, you know, when it comes to infertility. And I think I know that people who reached out to me had to kind of take a moment, I don't know, to get out of their own head and to make some time and some space to, you know, ask me how I was doing. And I know it probably wasn't an easy conversation for them, but I appreciated it. So I don't know. I think definitely less, than you, but there was a decent amount of support.
Yeah. Do you feel like I used to remember just like walking into some rooms and we were childless and we would walk in and sometimes I felt like people just, it was sort of like a pity invite. Like I remember one brunch in particular we were invited to and we were the only ones without kids and it was definitely like a kids brunch. People sometimes don't know how to talk to you, like you just said. Like sometimes people don't know the right words to say when you're really going through it, right? And I feel like for me, that was hard because you're like, I know in the back of their mind, they want to ask me. And I feel it now, having friends who are going through infertility, I want to talk to them about it, but I also don't want to bring it up. So sometimes it just felt weird in certain scenarios because it's just a hard thing to navigate. And I'm a very public person, and I told you going through it too, I was like, I have to talk to people about this or I'm not going to do it, because to be private would have been harder for me because I find community important, right? For you and sort of your male relationships, was that something that you felt too, or what was that dynamic like when you were around your guy friends?
I think in groups, we just really didn't talk about it a whole lot. I think in one-on-ones, then, you know, we would talk about work and talk about family. And then like that topic would come up as just a part of the overall conversation as we're talking about things going on in life. But I didn't often or really make it a point to like have a dedicated conversation about infertility or about, you know, the challenges that, you know, that I was having, that you and I were having at that time. Mostly, you know, getting together with friends, talking with people is enjoyable, is lighthearted, is a highlight of the day or the weekend or whatever it is. And this was the opposite of that. And it wasn't an enjoyable topic for me. And so I think mostly I shied away from it because it was easier. But, you know, family will pull it out of you. And good friends will too. And I think that's kind of what happened.
Yeah. I know it's never something you really want to bring up, but I felt the people who asked about it truly cared and they were truly rooting for us, so much so. And we'll get to this in a minute, but once we actually had our miracle, Jackson, those were the same people that were, you know, his like community, the people, his village around him and us when we were born. And so it kind of in my mind was like, okay, I got to have this awkward conversation over, you know, a dirty martini. And once I get through this conversation, I have a really big support system on the other side. And I think it was easier for me to talk about with my female friends. And I know, I feel like for me, there was a sense of shame in the beginning, but it eventually kind of went away as I started to embrace it, because the more I talked about it, the more people came to the table, and there was this whole sort of infertility army around us. Do you feel like you had shame in the beginning, or how did you feel?
I think so. I mean, I think if shame is the same thing as embarrassment, I don't know, it's probably not, but the word embarrassment or like that feeling comes more to mind. And I think it was often something I didn't want to deal with. Like, I just didn't want to talk about. I didn't want to have to think about it any more than I had to, which was kind of interesting because it was always in the back of my mind. Well, it wasn't always something that I was like actively talking to somebody about. So I couldn't really get away from it, even if I was choosing to not have conversations with people about it. So yeah, I think for me, it was more embarrassment. And I never really came up with, like you were saying, you know, it would come up in conversations, or you're meeting people for the first time, or you're in some group setting and you're just kind of catching up with people casually about family life, or, you know, what kids are up to, what are they into? And, you know, then they would kind of like the conversation would center on me. It was my turn to, you know, divulge information and to share. And I didn't have a whole lot to share. And I think sometimes it was probably just awkward. I don't even really remember what I would say. And I think sometimes, you know, it was very comfortable. Like, it was like, yeah, we'd like to have kids, and hopefully that will happen at some point. Whatever my approach was, or whatever I said, to me, it never really felt comfortable. I never got, I think, in a good groove with it.
Yeah. And that's real. I mean, I bet so many men, people who identify as men going through this same journey, can relate to that. There is almost like this unspoken, just like, I'm one of the six, right? Like, we're one in the six people who are dealing with this. And I feel like for us too, we really learned what to say and what not to say to people. Like, I'll never ask anyone, do you have kids? I just won't. I just never will. I'll be like, oh, okay. And just sort of like allow the conversation to take place naturally and progress. Do you have pets? Where do you live? If I'm meeting somebody for the first time, because anytime somebody would ask me, do you have kids? I felt shame, right? Like, I feel like that's a normal thing. Even for us having one child, I feel like when somebody's like, oh, are you going to have another? That's another thing that I realized I'll never say to anybody else, because you never know somebody's story. So there is this like heightened sense of shame and insecurity, and it just comes with the territory, unfortunately. But I want to talk to you too about the support you had from other men going through this. Do you think you had any support? Do you wish you had support now going through it? Do you wish you did something differently?
I think what I had was a strong core group of family and of close friends. And I think for me, and at that time, that was sufficient. That was helpful. That challenged me to talk about things I didn't want to keep building, I think, relationships with people that I really cared about, to share who I am with them and vice versa. So I never engaged with, you know, like a support group or a help group. I know there were, you know, some information from the IVF centers about different groups you could join or people you could talk to. And I didn't do those. I think like part of that was all of the IVF like logistics in the process was time consuming on its own. And I think in a world where you only have so much time, you know, confiding in and using, leveraging like my family and then a few close friends was the best fit for me. And I think, I don't know, I think it really helped.
Yeah. Sometimes I wish people wouldn't ask about it, so it would just go away. It was kind of one of those things where you're just so inundated with appointments and insurance and billing and having to know, you know, when to take which shot at which time. Like, I really wish somebody would have said, okay, you're going to have a second job as we got into it. Cause we did three rounds of IVF back to back, right? Like, so that was like a full 7-8 months of just going through it. And there were certain points I can remember just saying to you, like, that's the other thing too. I'm so glad I had you and your support. And I feel like we really leaned on each other because we were going through the same thing and only we knew what we were going through. And I think infertility for couples can either make you or break you. And I think it made us stronger. And I think we had each other to confide in. But I wish there were more male support groups. And that's what we're here to do today. And I know you mentioned family and having close friends is so important, but I think platforms like this and speaking your truth and telling your story make such a difference. So would you say going through this impacted you in a certain way? And if so, like how would you say you're different before and after?
It's hard to know what it would have been like without going through this. And I think I was just thinking about this yesterday when Jackson and I went for, what were we doing? We were like outside on the sidewalk or something. I think we took Big Al. And so we're walking on the sidewalk on the way back in. And, you know, he just held my hand. And I was like, for whatever reason, at that moment, I was like, man, that was really special. And it's a small thing, but there are lots of tiny examples of things that I guess I find myself being thankful and having a lot of gratitude for the way that things turned out, because I don't know that I would have had the same awareness of, I don't know, how lucky or how full things are in our current situation had we not gone through what we did. So I think that part has changed me. I don't know if you feel that on a daily basis, but that's something that probably internally that I feel.
Yeah. No, I feel that for sure. I do think both of us are different having gone through it. Like, I have definitely changed. It caused me to really face a lot of my own lessons that I needed to learn and do it pretty quickly. And not only did infertility do that, but then going straight from, okay, you have this infertility identity for like 3 years, and then that goes away once you get pregnant. And that is the end goal, right? But then you become a mom and a parent and you become a dad and you just forget who you once were because you take on this whole new identity. So I think both of us have just dramatically changed in the past 8 years since we started going through this. And then now Jackson's 5.5. Like, we've both had to really understand more about who we are together, and really understand how can we show up as the best versions of ourselves. And I've had to really shed a lot of shit that didn't need to be there in order to show up the way I want to be as a parent. But I will say, you know, had we not gone through infertility, I do wonder what my viewpoint would be as a mom. Because when I look at that little face, I just feel so lucky, and so grateful. And he was worth every shot, every poke and prod, every blood draw. And at one point I had the statistics of what that was. But I do think you and I both had to, it is a metamorphosis, right? Like, I feel like we both had to dig deep. So let me ask you this. If you could go back and give John 8 years ago advice, what would that advice be? That's when we started this journey.
8 years ago. Yeah. It's a long time. That's a hard one. I don't know that there's a whole lot that people could have told me that would have, I think, drastically changed the way that I approached it. And maybe I should have been more open to suggestions to reach out to people. But I felt like the connections that I had with family and with the tight group of close friends that I confided in and who supported me, I felt like that was a crutch for me, and it made a big difference. I'm not really sure, to be honest.
Yeah, and that's okay. Did you hear that snorting? I did not toot. That was big, letting out a big snore. That's our dog, 8-pound toy poodle, which, by the way, was our first child. Would you like to tell them, Prove It Peeps, how you used to ride with Big on a Bjorn on your motorcycle?
Yeah, this was, I don't know, how long was that? 10 years ago? Something like that. We had this little motorcycle, and I'd take him around Chicago, and he would ride on my chest in a baby Bjorn. I guess those were my pre-dad days, but I was still rocking the baby Bjorn. And we would just ride around, and Big is a toy poodle. He's got floppy ears, and so they would just be flopping in the wind. And we got a lot of looks, some comments, and I don't know. I think he enjoyed it. I did.
I think it was awesome. And I think that you really, I just remember we were also going through the beginning stages of infertility at that time, and you really wanted a Bjorn. Like, that was a goal for you. When we would watch our friends' kids, you wanted the Bjorn. So we had the makeshift Bjorn for Big. And it was awesome. He was our first child, and we got him before we actually got married, and John got two legs and I got two legs, and he's 13 now, and look at him thriving, blind as a bat, but living his best life.
He seems happy.
He seems great. He's sleeping right here next to me. Okay. Well, I feel like you have shared a lot. Is there anything that you would say? Let's say we have one of our Improve It peeps listening here today, who's going through it, who has been looking for a resource like this, and he pressed play on this show. Is there any advice you would give him?
I feel like at this point, I'm kind of a broken record on the few things that worked for me, and I feel like that made a difference. And so I think it's finding two circles, if you have them, that you can rely on. And one is a couple family members, because they've ideally like known you from the beginning of life, and they know you in and out and can challenge you and can ask you questions and can really be there for you. And the other part is picking a couple friends and, building the relationship with them and like letting them in to what you're going through from an IVF standpoint and what the struggles are, and like, share your emotions with them and be wide open. The people who I did that with, I'm closer friends with now today than I was before. And so those two things were a huge support system for me. It probably took me, a handful of weeks in before those became a thing that I knew I could rely on and that I could count on. And so, I don't know, starting those things early on and being open with what the struggle is helpful.
Yeah. Do you feel like because for me, I was really focused on self-care and taking care of myself and trying to be in the best headspace and be mentally and physically well to carry a child, to create a child. Do you feel like you had any self-care practices from your perspective?
I think probably, well, the only thing I did was continued to work out and exercise, I think, during that process. But I think that for the most part, I was not focused on myself. I was focused on you. I was focused on, the process itself and kind of just doing what needed to be done to get through it. And so I don't think there was a whole lot of space or room or energy to do other self-care.
Yeah. It definitely is such I guess it kind of prepared me for motherhood, because you have to take care of yourself first before you can take care of somebody else. Would I wish this on my worst enemy? No, because it's hell to go through. It's hell because you want something and you mourn the loss of something that doesn't even exist, but you want it so bad. So there's so much that we could unpack here today. And I'm so glad that you came on the show. I want to just leave with this because we have a lot of people who are leading teams listening to this show. If you were talking directly to a leader and you could say, hey, create a safer workspace for teammates going through infertility, what's one thing they could do to create a safer space?
Two things come to mind. I think one is asking the person how they're doing and having it doesn't have to be a big, long, deep, heavy conversation, but doing that check-in and just asking the question like, how are you today? How are things going with the IVF process? Or how are you and your partner doing? And just like giving them a chance to respond and seeing what they say and kind of meeting them where they're at in that conversation. So one is just not making it the elephant in the room and not talking about it, but addressing it and asking about it. And I think that's probably it.
I know it's so easy to just ask somebody how they're doing, but we get so wrapped up in our day-to-day, things become so transactional. I think that's a great takeaway. Just asking your team, how are you doing today? Checking in with them and making it a space where people can come to you and talk to you. Because I will say, I did hide our infertility from my team for a long time. And then as soon as I opened up about it, I was really happy that I did because it made what I was going through to them seem more realistic. And also I didn't have to hide as many things. That was what worked for me. And what worked for you was completely different. So I think everybody is on their own path, their own journey. But I am so grateful, my husband, that you came on the show. I feel like you had a lot of good things to say and a lot of good insight to give somebody listening. I really do think I wish we had a resource like this years ago. I really do. And that's why I wanted to create it. Is there anything left that you would want to say to anybody listening here today who's going through what we went through?
I mean, I hope for them, and it was definitely our case, that there was a light at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, it resulted in Jackson, and he is the best. And I couldn't imagine my life without him. And so, you know, keeping the faith, saying prayers, talking to God, asking lots of questions, being steadfast, like just digging deep and keep pushing through it were things people told me, and those definitely needed to happen. And reach out to people and talk to them about it in whatever capacity you feel comfortable. If it's people you don't know, if it's people at work, if it's friends of yours, if it's family, if it's via text only, or if it's phone calls, like whatever it is, just do it and challenge yourself to do it, because it's easy to not talk about it. It's easy to not do it. But when you put yourself out there, there's an immediate feeling of you feel like other people heard you and like there are commonalities, and it might surprise you what other people share back with you. So, I think just being open.
I agree.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's what we started on, isn't it?
Yeah, that was your intention.
Openness.
And you had a hyphenated one. What was your hyphenated one?
Self-reflection.
Did you do that?
I think so.
Full circle freaking moment here. And okay, I have to say this, John. I'm really proud of you because I asked you to do this. I'm just going to share. You did not want to do it at first. And you had to really dig deep. And I think this was really cool for you to even reflect on years later. Are you glad you did it?
Yeah, I'm interested to watch this back because I feel uncomfortable. and I think this is like, I mean, you had me on the podcast to talk about probably one of the most difficult things that I've gone through in my life and something that I haven't shared openly with a lot of people. And so this was a hard conversation for me.
Yeah. And I know that. And I'm so proud of you. And I'm grateful. And the thing is, I'm just going to say this for everybody listening. You and I, like, you don't want to be on stage. Back in the day, like when I was doing improv, and John has seen every improv show basically that I ever did in my entire life. And I'm talking about the really, really crappy ones on a Sunday night at 9 o'clock when there was like two people in a theater. And he was like, if you ever call me on stage, I'll never come to another one of your shows again. Cause I used to do that in the very beginning of our relationship. And so you don't have you have an Instagram. You don't really use it. You just don't even go on Instagram anymore. You have LinkedIn, but you barely use it. You really don't like the spotlight. And I think for us and you and I, that works. But I also am so proud of you for stepping outside of your comfort zone, because I think even though this is your first time on the show in the spotlight, you are talking about a very important thing that a lot of people are going to resonate with and find extremely helpful. So I didn't want to just have you on the show to talk about like home decor. I don't know. We're just going through that right now. That's something I talked about. But I want you, you know, to talk about something that is going to be meaningful for you. And I hope it was not only beneficial for the peeps listening, but for you to talk about.
I feel good about it.
I'm proud of you. And let me ask you this. How are you going to work? This is something we ask everybody. Okay, this is a fun one. We'll end with a funny. How are you going to make work more playful today? What you going to do?
I'm going to go on a podcast.
After this?
Oh, yeah, probably not another podcast today.
Yeah, I don't want to do this one over.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I think my day is done, so I'm probably going to go on a walk. How about that?
Edson. Okay, I love you. Thank you for being on the show.
Glad to be here. Bye.
Bye. Okay, my Workday Playdate peeps. This conversation was a big one. I am so proud of John for doing this. And if today's episode resonated with you, I want you to know, my friend, that you are not alone. Infertility can feel so isolating, but you don't have to go through it in silence. Whether you're in this journey yourself or you're supporting a partner through it, you got to give yourself some grace. And if you're a leader listening today, let's create workplaces where these conversations aren't taboo. Now, if you want to continue the conversation and you have questions for John, because as I mentioned, he does not really go on Instagram and or LinkedIn, you can message me on Instagram at It's Erin Deal, or you can send a note to info@learntoimproveit.com. And I will make sure he gets it. And I want to remind you, as always, every workday is a playdate waiting to happen. I want you to keep playing, keep leading, and remember, you are seen, you are valued, and you are not alone.